Here's the Bills' latest pick.
With the ninth pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select Ed Oliver, defensive tackle, Houston.
Josh Allen, quarterback, Wyoming.
Tre'Davious White, defensive back, LSU.
Jermaine Edmonds, linebacker, Virginia Tech.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Wednesday to you. Wednesdays here on this podcast mean it's water cooler Wednesday, and I have a great guest scheduled to have an organic conversation about the Buffalo Bills, and we'll talk a lot of AFC East and, of course, the New England Patriots. My guest is none other than the host of Locked On Patriots, Mark Schofield. Mark, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Mr. Marino, pleasure to be with you as always. Excited to chat with you. It's been a while since we've had a chance to hang out, so I'm looking forward to this one, buddy.
You know, I think the last time you and I collaborated on a pod was that Sam Darnold discussion, right?
It was WGR.
And WGR,
Nate Geary, we were breaking down Sam Darnold, our concerns with him, and the Bills went with a different direction, but Sam Darnold did find his way to the AFC East, which now has three of last year's top 10 quarterbacks, top 10 draft choices, which is amazing.
And then New England has this one guy who's pretty good at quarterback.
This one guy that seems to, you know, just go on keeping on. At some point, they'll have to find a new guy. But every year I do this, I'm like, oh, you know, here are some quarterbacks of the draft that I think might be a good fit for New England. And Bill Belichick keeps going in a different direction.
Were you a Stidham guy? I know this is off script already, but
I mean, it was interesting. You know, in our group chat, I remember right around this time last year, I sort of was making some rumblings that, oh, you know, if Stidham has a good year, he can put himself into the mix. Maybe he makes a leap. And he didn't, you know. But I think, you know, and I actually cribbed this from you when I was doing a Senior Bowl preview. I think you nailed it when you talked about Stidham going down to Mobile. Like, if you were going to bet on a guy, you know, that was going to have a nice week and sort of generate some buzz for himself, it would have been Stidham, because he gets himself away from that Auburn offense, which I think for the most part was a pretty bad fit for him. He gets to throw for Kyle Shanahan. He gets to be in that kind of system, and he looks great, you know, in shorts and a helmet. And so, yeah, he had a nice enough week. I think it's a good spot for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were other quarterbacks that I had graded higher, obviously, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, look, I'm still, my corpse, my charred body is still on Ripon Hill. You know, I really thought that would have been the guy that the Patriots would have gone for, or Ryan Finley. But the Stidham thing, we'll see what happens. And it's always nice, you know, now my Twitter header photo is me and the new Patriots quarterback.
Oh, so see, that's
kind of cool.
That worked out good
for that. Yeah. That worked out perfectly.
I've always said this about Jarrett Stidham. He throws a pretty football. You know, he's got a lot of work to do mentally. And certainly that Auburn offense didn't do him any favors. And really the entire unit underachieved, and the expectations were certainly not met. But from a mechanics and you know, like accuracy when he's kept clean, like I feel like there's something to work with here. So I agree with you that this is the right landing spot. And he's at least more interesting than the Danny Etlings of the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when they drafted Danny Etling, I was just like, well, I mean, you know, he's a camp arm. I mean, that's what he's going to be. So I'm excited to see how Stidham sort of develops. I'm always excited to see how these, you know, this new quarterback class unfolds. I'm curious about, you know, how Daniel Jones pans out. I like the Haskins fit in Washington. I think Kyler Murray is going to be in a great spot. I love what Arizona added around him. And so it'll be interesting to see all these guys. But of course, look, you know this as well as anybody. I mean, I just got done Nate Stanley, Cole McDonald. I mean, up next is just, you know, doing the more work on Herbert, memorizing how to pronounce Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, I already messed that up. But still,
yeah,
I mean,
that
was bad. I missed it. I've literally written that out on like scraps of paper throughout my office. Like, you got to get this down, because that's what we do now, Joe. I mean, we start doing the next group of guys. And there will be somebody to rise that we weren't talking about, you know, right now, over the course of the season. So it's always fun to see these quarterback classes develop over the course of a season.
Mark, let's dig into this AFC East discussion. And, you know, look, the Patriots for the last 20 years have dominated this division, and the stress that it's put on the Dolphins, Jets, and Bills
has been considerable. We've seen those guys switch regimes, switch coaches, switch general managers left and right, trying to keep pace with the Patriots. And obviously the failure has been very well documented. So now with each team now having a 2018 first round quarterback, new direction, seemingly good personnel people in place, good coaching staffs in place. What do you think about this? Do we finally have some balance? Do we finally see some teams ready to compete with New England?
I think it's kind of like that look on Shooter McGavin's face when Happy said to him, Happy learned to putt. You know, because for so long it's been like, you know, the Patriots, because of all the sort of, I don't know if dysfunction is the right word, but, you know, the other three teams in this division trying to figure out a plan and a path forward, and for many of them trying to figure out the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. It does seem like the three of them have figured that out. And what I love about the draft more than anything else, I think, Joe, is it's that one time a year where you get that true insight, that true window into the thinking of how a franchise wants to approach the years ahead, how they view their roster, how they view what they're going to do schematically. And I love, you know, the Jets at three, Quinton Williams, interior defensive tackle. You know, obviously Buffalo Bills at nine, Ed Oliver. And then, you know, Miami at 13, Christian Wilkins. Three interior defensive tackles. What's the one thing that over the years has given Tom Brady fits as a quarterback?
It's sort of pressure in his face. Yeah.
Pressure in his face. All three teams said, we're going to go get that guy. You know, and for Buffalo, obviously, they sort of lucked out in the sense that Oliver kind of fell to him with guys like, you know, Daniel Jones and T.J. Hawkinson coming off the board before, and obviously Clinton Farrell, who I thought, you know, was probably a little bit earlier than people expected him to go. But all three teams have that plan. And like you said, all three teams now have at least a viable pass forward at the quarterback position. I think, you know, Sam Darnold looks like he's going to be the guy that pans out in New York. I think Josh Allen exceeded expectations, certainly exceeded my expectations for how I viewed him coming out. You know, his athleticism, I think, is probably better than advertised, and that has translated better than I thought. And the arm talent has enabled him to sort of have an easier developmental curve than I expected. And Miami, with the trade for Josh Rosen, that's given them a path forward where, you know, if Josh Rosen pans out, great. If not, they'll probably be bad again, and they'll be near the top of the board, and they could draft that quarterback whose name I'm still learning to pronounce. And so you put it all together, these teams have some viable paths forward to be in competitive in the next year, which is, as a Patriots fan, you know, it's interesting. It's exciting in a sense, because it's going to be a fascinating division to watch, especially if, look, we truly get Tom Brady versus three young guys for the next year or two. It's going to be fascinating to see.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I feel like they're at all different stages of this rebuild, and it feels like the Dolphins are behind, and they are, but at the same time, this is a team that, like you said, if Josh Rosen's not the guy, they've got a year to figure that out. They didn't give up that much to get him. There's good quarterbacks available coming up, and so they can correct that, and hopefully the Bills certainly have their answer in Josh Allen, and that's what I want to talk about next year. As a Patriots guy, you got to play Josh Allen twice a year now moving forward, getting a chance to see how he evolved last year, particularly down the stretch. What is that like? What do you think about when you have to defend Josh Allen and the makeup of this Bills offense?
Well, it's interesting because if you look at how Belichick has sort of felt about defending modern NFL offenses, there is traditionally the one thing that he looks at as the thing that terrifies him the most. And that's sort of versatile, do-it-all type tight end. And that probably, you know, and he'll tell you that dates back to his days, you know, with Mark Bavaro and seeing what he can do. And now you look at how the Bills have tried to address that need. Tyler Croft, Dawson Knox in the third round, who was an interesting study. You know, they just added Lee Smith. So they're trying some different things at that position. But the other thing that concerns Belichick about the more modern offenses are mobile quarterbacks. You know, especially, you know, there were rumors before last year's draft that he wanted maybe a Lamar Jackson because he saw what Deshaun Watson did to his defense and said, we need somebody that has that sort of skill set. And Josh Allen does bring that athleticism to the table, which is going to be difficult to defend because it taxes you at all levels of the defense. You know, when a quarterback has the ability to extend plays, obviously it taxes the guys up front because they're now chasing somebody. You know, they have to get out of their rush lanes. They have to try to worry about contain. You might have to do different things schematically up front, maybe switch to more of a mush rush to sort of keep that player in the pocket. it changes your approach. And then on the back end, you've now got to cover, instead of 2 or 3 seconds into a play, 4, 5, 6 seconds into a play. And a lot of even the best defensive backs in the game will have breakdowns in those kind of situations. And it, you know, sets up opportunities for an offense to exploit the defense in scramble drill situations. And so that's something that you have to worry about on all levels of the defense. And so that's one thing that he's worried about. I also think the addition of Cole Beasley is going to be tantamount for Allen's development, because having that guy similar to, say, Julian Edelman, you know, I think they're somewhat similar players that can get open quickly, option routes, pivot routes, juke routes. They can give Allen that sort of quick outlet on, say, 3rd and 4, you know, when you just have to make a quick, easy throw, whether it's on a pivot out route or a juke route over the middle. That's huge for a young quarterback's development, to have that sort of guy that, you know, odds are is going to be open. So I think you sort of look at how Buffalo has constructed their offense around Josh Allen, and this is the window, right? Today's NFL, you want that rookie quarterback deal, then you get them help and you make that run while they're relatively cheap. I think Buffalo has added some pieces around Josh Allen that are going to enable him to take both the developmental leap he needs, as well as to make them competitive here during that rookie deal.
You talked a lot there about his mobility and how much stress that can put on a defense, as well as certainly his ability to throw the football deep down the field. But I think Josh Allen is just a unique football player, and some of the traditional measures that we use statistically to kind of calculate successful quarterbacks, they're going to be different for Josh Allen. And I think we're going to talk a lot about completion percentage with him, and people are always going to point to that being something that's probably always going to hover in the mid to low 50s. Is it something where we kind of have to throw out those traditional measures with Josh Allen, just understand that he's a unique football player, and maybe he doesn't do it exactly how the greats do it, but he's still difficult to defend, and an offense can still prosper behind what he offers? Does that make sense to you?
And that makes perfect sense to me, Joe. And I think, you know, when you look at how we're going to grade Josh Allen in the years ahead, like you said, some of the sort of traditional metrics we use, whether it's completion percentage or touchdown to interception ratio or whatever, you might want to say, put those aside. And I think you want to sort of grade Josh Allen similar to how we should be grading Cam Newton. It's sort of similar play styles, similar type of athletes. They're athletic quarterbacks that maybe the completion percentage isn't where you want it to be, but you look at, you know, what they're doing schematically, you look at the type of throws that they're making. If they're going to be pushing the ball a little bit more downfield and more of a vertical based offense, the completion percentage is going to just naturally be a little bit lower than, you know, the 60, 65, 70% you're seeing from, you know, more, some of these offenses like New England's, that's more predicated on the quick passing game and throw it in the short area. And I think you also have to factor in the mobility, the rushing yardage, the stress that they can put on the defense with their legs, what that brings to the table. And so I think you more want to look at both of those players in similar veins. Like completion percentage, if you're worried about Josh Allen and completion percentage, you're worried about the wrong thing. I think you want to see reduction in turnovers. I think you want to see a situation where they're, you know, they're not having a ton of three and outs and things like that. They're extending drives. They're finishing drives. I don't think you concern yourself with, you know, completion percentage. I think that's the wrong metric to sort of view him, because what he's going to do to help Buffalo win games isn't going to be measured that way. It's going to be measured more in sort of yardage and touchdowns and big type plays, big throws downfield. That's what you want to view him through. That's the lens you want to, you know, view him under.
Is it sustainable, Mark? I mean, is Josh Allen going to be able to have a sustained career, run the ball as much as he does, or is there, what do we need to see moving forward? I mean, is it more spacing on offense? It seems like they've done that with the personnel that they brought in, but, you know, how does he need to evolve to sustain his career and continue improving and being a top-tier quarterback that the Bills envision him becoming?
I mean, I think for Josh Allen, there are two things that he needs to really sort of work on that will allow him to make the sort of developmental leap to where, you know, in his second deal, you know, his second contract, it's not a situation where, you know, you need to have a ton of talent around him. You know, now he's become that quarterback that you win games because of. And the two areas I think he really needs to capitalize and develop are, one, the processing speed, because he's still in that window where he believes in his right arm to bail him out of situations. And he will either be slower with reads than he needs to be or attempt throws that maybe other quarterbacks would shy away from. And right now, that's fine, you know, because he still has that arm talent and he still has the cannon. But at some point, you need to get that mental part of the game sped up enough where you're ahead of it. You're making anticipation throws. You're not just purely a see it, throw it type quarterback. And the other thing is, and it builds off of this, the reliance on the arm is great at times, but you still need to keep it in the holster. You know, remember Josh Allen at Wyoming, and for many times on film, you would see his plan B was, I'm going to roll out to the right, buy some time, and then just throw it deep or throw it hard, and I'm going to find a way to make it work. And that can work in the Mountain West, but then you look at that throw he had, for example, against the Green Bay Packers, where he flushes to the right before halftime and just attempts a deep throw late over the middle into traffic and it gets intercepted. You know, so he needs to cut down on sort of the hero ball type plays. And if he does those two things that sort of build off the idea that he believes supremely in his arm talent, then he's going to make that sort of leap forward as a all-around quarterback that will enable him to be a guy that you win games because of, not a guy that you win games with.
Mark, when you think about the way Buffalo has built around Josh Allen, making a lot of investments this offseason in free agency to improve the offensive line. They signed six unrestricted free agents on the offensive line. Obviously, Cole Beasley and John Brown at wide receiver. Investments at tight end that you've already mentioned. Frank Gore, TJ Yeldon, drafting Devin Singletary. When you think about this personnel that's been structured around Josh Allen, do you dig it? Do you like this? How does this fit with Brian Daboll's system, a guy that I know you're very familiar with? What are your thoughts on the way Buffalo is built around Josh Allen specifically this offseason?
I mean, I think that you look at what they're building around Josh Allen, it makes a ton of sense. You add, like I said, Cole Beasley. You can fill that sort of Julian Edelman role where you've got somebody that – you know, can run those option routes, run those pivot routes, work open against slot corners, give Josh Allen that quick read on those third and four type situations. That's going to be huge for him. You know, added Singletary and Frank Gore. I mean, that's also similar and mirrors the Patriots approach at running back, where you have different running backs that can fill different skill set type needs, whether it's Frank Gore, there's probably more of a between the tackles guy, Singletary and what he brings to the table, probably more of a versatile type guy. You can use different packages and, you know, one fills the James White role, one fills the Sony Michel role, McCoy maybe the Rex Burkhead role, and you can see how they piece it together that way. Knox is a very interesting player. I mean, you're going to see him used maybe in some vertical routes, maybe as a big slot at times. And so I think what they're trying to do is give them a bunch of different ways to attack a defense. You know, the more ways you can stress a defense, the more things that that defensive coordinator has to worry about on Wednesday night when he's trying to put together that finalize that game plan, the better you're going to be as an offense. You know, the more ways you have to stress a defense, it's going to give you and your quarterback a lot of different ways to attack them. It's going to make it easier on him. You can put together different packages. You can change from drive to drive how you look and really sort of get matchups, because more than anything else, this is a matchup-based league now. And so now you can see situations where they can go with, you know, two running back personnel sets, one running back personnel sets, multiple tight end personnel sets, and really sort of stress that defense. And the more the defense has to worry about, the less your quarterback has to think about, because you're going to get matchups that he can identify pre-snap and then exploit them. And so putting that all together, I think this is a wise way to build around the young quarterback and to help his development, to make it easier on him to execute once that ball is snapped.
Tremendous insight on the Bills offense here from Mark Schofield, who's my guest here today on Water Cooler Wednesday. A reminder, you can follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Schofield. He's the host of the Locked On Patriots podcast, which is part of the same podcast network you're listening to here on this Locked On Bills edition, as well as Words that can be found across the internet, Inside the Pylon, Pro Football Weekly, Pat's Pulpit, Big Blue View. Just follow the guy on Twitter and keep up with his content, because as you can tell, the insight on football is tremendous. Mark, I want to shift gears here to the New England Patriots. And when you think about this team moving forward, will Bill Belichick coach beyond Tom Brady, or do you believe they're a package deal? And how do you think this football team is set up for life without either one of those guys?
Yeah, that's sort of the fascinating question, Joe. And I think if you were to separate those two guys and sit them down and maybe get an adult beverage or two in both of them, both of them would probably say, I want to be without that guy. I want to be here in New England without that guy, you know, in his job. Because let's face it, these are both competitive, hyper, uber competitive people. And I think that both of them have heard, you know, that, oh, it's Belichick. That's, you know, it's Brady's success is due to Belichick, or Belichick wouldn't have been successful without Brady. And I'm sure that at some point, both of those guys would love to prove to the world that, no, I'm the reason why this team has been so successful since, you know, the year 2000. You know, it's because of me, the quarterback, or it's because of me, the head coach. And so I'd love to, you know, hear that from them. I'm sure that's how they both feel. The problem for Brady is he's got father time. I mean, yeah, he's, you know, a couple of months younger than me. I don't know how he does it. Like, I'm sitting here right now. I'm just on a podcast and my back is killing me. My shoulders are killing me. My knees are killing me. This morning when I woke up, I felt like my shoulder was on the other side of the bed. And he's just out there slinging it and looking great doing it. I don't know how he does it. Maybe it is the pistachio ice cream, the pliability, the TB12 method, which I tried and it just made me sore. So maybe he will be that guy to finally not beat Father Time, but take him the distance. But still, I have to think that eventually he's going to fall off the proverbial cliff. You know, the Max Kellermans of the world have been predicting that since, you know, 2007. And he staved it off for now, but maybe it comes. And there were times last year where we thought, myself included, you know, that game against the Bills late season, you saw that Tom Brady. I wasn't thinking that guy was going to go into Kansas City and win an AFC championship game, but they were able to do it. But I still think that if either of those guys has a chance to, you know, serve in their capacity without the other one, it's going to be Belichick, just because Brady has father time up against him. And I'm sure, you know, Belichick will be successful. The question is, could he be as successful without Tom Brady? And I don't know. But at the same time, you know, would Brady have even gotten the job without Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Belichick obviously famously moved away from Bertie Kosar, you know, moved away from Drew Bledsoe here. I mean, if Tom Brady is in Cleveland, does he become Tom Brady? I don't know. And so it might just be a situation where maybe we'll never get the chance. I think Belichick would most likely be the guy to continue his career without the other one. But in terms of trying to figure out who is more responsible for this run, it's hard to point at one over the other with any sort of true sense of confidence. You know, I think Belichick obviously benefited from having Brady. Brady obviously benefited from having Belichick.
When you think about this team in 2019, defending Super Bowl champions, what's your biggest concern? What are the holes on this football team that could prevent them from going the distance again this year?
I mean, I think the biggest concern right now is left tackle. They move on from Nate Solder. They bring in Trent Brown, who has a fantastic year. And now he's going to get paid a ton of money to play right tackle by Jon Gruden, which, you know, given who the Raiders are going to face, you know, lining up across from right tackle, it sort of makes some sense. But now you've got Isaiah Wynn, who, you know, we saw him down at the Senior Bowl 2 years ago, looked great. People expected he would kick inside, but the Patriots sort of view him as a guy that can play left tackle in the National Football League. But he's technically still a rookie, missed all of last season, and he's coming off an Achilles injury. You know, they've got Yannick Juice, who I think is a nice suede tackle type guy, but, you know, push comes to shove, can he step in and be a left tackle if Wynn doesn't pan out? I mean, that's a big question mark. They've added, you know, Jared Veldheer, who's, again, just a depth tackle type guy. I don't know if people are banking on him to be left tackle, but they have to figure that spot out. They have to figure out replacing some of what you're going to lose from Rob Gronkowski. I mean, you're not going to find a one-to-one guy to replace him. They're throwing a lot of resources at it. Austin Seferian Jenkins, Benjamin Watson, Matt Lacoste. You know, Andrew Beck, the Texas tight end, who maybe he was an interesting study when I got a chance to look at him this week. But I don't think they're looking at him to, if he has three catches next year, I think it would just be a cherry on top of what he brings to the table, because he's a blocking tight end. That's what he brings to the table. I think you described him. He has like tight end three upside when you were writing about him. And so they're throwing a lot of resources at the tight end position, and they're throwing a lot more resources at the wide receiver spot, because you don't know what you're going to get from Josh Gordon. You know, they draft N'Keal Harry, who I think is a nice fit for what they're going to ask him to do. You know, they just signed Inman, Demaryius Thomas, Jacoby Myers, an undrafted free agent. They're trying to figure out that position as well. And so offensively, it's left tackle, it's tight end, and it's the wide receiver spot. I think they've got everything else kind of sorted out. Defensively, it's pass rush. You know, they lose Trey Flowers. Belichick wasn't going to overspend for a pass rusher. They always try to get it with scheme more than anything else. I think Winovich is a nice fit for what they do. I think he's sort of the commensurate Patriot. I mean, you look at him, you think, you know, that's a guy that's going to find his way to New England. I love the video of Belichick when they drafted him, just like, yeah, we're going to make him the pick. Look forward to seeing you. All right, bye. Just no excitement whatsoever. I mean, but that's Belichick for you. Yeah. But I mean, the linebacker spot, I think they've got figured out for the most part. They're going to get Bentley back, who was looking great. You know, when they drafted him, I was like, two down thumper. What role does this guy have in today's NFL? But he seems to have a little bit more athleticism than we thought. I think the defensive backfield, they loved Williams. I mean, they absolutely loved him. They wanted him at 32. I didn't see it, but I think they're going to use him maybe on tight ends because of his length and his size. Again, getting back to that conversation about, you know, Belichick and worried about tight ends. I mean, they were using Devin McCourty at times on Travis Kelce, you know, and so maybe Williams is going to be brought in to do some of that. And so I think the defensive backfield, the second and third levels, I think, of the defense are pretty much set. They're going to, you know, have some concerns about pass rush. But Patriots fans are always worried about pass rush, and they always seem to manufacture pressure when they need to. And so I think pass rush and then the three offensive positions are the areas of concern. And, yes, it does seem like we're shaping up for a camp competition at the punter spot. I got a chance to, like, do some punter scouting this week, you know, looking at Jake Bailey, some hang time stuff there. So we'll see how that pans out with Ryan Allen and Jake Bailey. But, you know, it's always interesting. You know, Patriots fans, I get added to because the DMs are open on Twitter. So I get added to all these, like, Pats fans chats, and seeing them gripe right now about Belichick's picks and Belichick's a bad general manager is death taxes, and Patriots fans griping about Belichick's drafts. It's hilarious every year. People wonder, like, why is he doing this? And then they find themselves back in an AFC championship game.
Mark, if we strip this down, you did not just describe a Super Bowl contender. You just told me about a team with concerns at left tackle, offensive weapons, and pass rush.
Yeah. I mean, it's so strange right now. The makeup and composition of this team headed into training camp, because there are concerns, but these were concerns that they had last year. I mean, you rewind the tape. This time last year, it's, well, they got a lot of wide receivers in the room, but who's going to pan out? I mean, you know, this Braxton Berrios kid, you know, Josh Gordon wasn't in the mix at the time. You know, what are we going to get from Philip Dorsett? There were questions there. Gronkowski was grumbling about retirement, so there were concerns about whether he was going to be able to be a full go. And look, they had moved on from Nate Solder and Trent Brown. What are we getting there? And they drafted Isaiah Wynn, and he's a rookie. And so the question marks are somewhat similar. I think what helps, obviously, is, you know, Dr. Scarnecchia is a fantastic offensive line coach. And if there's a left tackle to be made from Isaiah Wynn, he's going to make him into a left tackle. And when they drafted him, he said, look, you know, people are saying he's doesn't have the long arms, he can't play. Well, he's the same length as Matt Light, and he was an all-pro here. So I think Scarnecchia, if there's a chance Isaiah Wynn pans out at left tackle, it's going to be here with Scar. You know, and if not, they'll find somebody behind him. I think if you look at what they lost on the tight end position, they'll find guys that can do a bit of what Gronkowski did and just mix and match based on matchups and opportunity. And finally, look, the great equalizer is TB12. I mean, we've said this for years with him. I mean, there were years when he was thrown to Rashe Caldwell and handed off to Kevin Faulk, and they and thrown to Troy Brown, and Julian Edelman was covering Anquan Boldin in, on the you know, final drive of an AFC championship game. Yeah. I mean, they find ways to make it work. You know, are there concerns? Yeah, but there were more concerns last year coming off the Super Bowl loss. And so, and the other thing to remember is this is a team that seems to be able to reinvent itself as the season goes on. I mean, look at that divisional round game against the Chargers. This was a 21 personnel, eye pro right, running, you know, off tackle right, off tackle left. That's how we're going to win games. And then in the AFC Championship game, push came to shove, there were 11 personnel and they were throwing it on every down. I mean, they will find whatever works at that moment to win. And that, more than anything, is a testament to how they've built this team. You know, they will find the way to win. They will reinvent themselves if they have to, and they will get better as the season goes along. They might stumble out of the gate again. They might go 2-2, 1-3 to start. But come December, we know that they'll be playing their best football because that's what they've done year in and year out.
Yeah, that's just how it goes. And I've learned, I've become smart enough to know to not focus on those deficiencies, because they always find a way to overcome them. and Belichick's a genius, and Tom Brady's the GOAT, and they're going to be right in the thick of it again in the AFC this year. You talked about some of the concerns, and so now I'm going to give you a unique opportunity here, Mark. You get to pluck one player off this Bills roster and put him on the New England Patriots. I'm eager to know who you would select.
Man, that's a tough call. I mean, you look at the needs that they have. I mean, would you go Deion Dawkins? I mean, that's an opportunity there to sort of solidify the offensive line a bit. That's a name that I'm certainly keeping in mind. Ed Oliver is interesting. Look, I mean, I think he's going to be a tremendous talent in the National Football League. I know he's a rookie. He hasn't played a down yet, but that's an interesting name. But I think that you're the guy that I would pick, because you can never have enough coverage in today's NFL, Tre'Davious White. You know, I think you put him across from Stephon Gilmore, and you just poached, you know, Buffalo's two best corners of the past, you know, couple of years and have them now playing in New England. I mean, those are two lockdown corners. I mean, then you can mix and match with some of the guys behind them. You can have Williams. You can have J.C. Jackson more in the slot. Gives you a lot of options to the secondary. And so while there are a couple of nice players here on this roster that I would love to have in New England, I think Tre'Davious White would be a great fit across from Stephon Gilmore.
I asked another Patriots guy the same question recently, and they also took Trey White. So yeah. I think that's a consensus. I thought you were going to go Oliver. I really did.
But. Yeah, I mean, I really thought about that, because, I mean, you could imagine what Belichick would do.
I don't want to imagine that at all.
I mean, you'd see him line it up shade nose. You'd see him probably, you know, on the edge in a wide nine. They'd stand him up at times. Like, they would have him moved all over the place. Belichick would probably have him in the slot, like out of nowhere. Like, oh, you got to put a tight end up there? We'll walk Ed Oliver out there to cover just to mess with you. I mean, he could do so many different things with them. Yeah, I mean, I thought about him, but I think Trey White probably, you know, give you another lockdown corner.
Makes sense. Mark, you've been a terrific guest. Thank you so much for giving me some of your time here. Your insight on the Bills and the Patriots has been tremendous, and I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that. Reminder, everyone, follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Schofield. He writes everywhere, and so the best way to keep track of it all is by hitting that follow button on his Twitter account. Mark, thanks so much. You brought the wisdom today here on the podcast, and I'm very grateful.
Just trying to bring my A game, because you're doing such great work here at Locked On Bills, Draft Dudes, the Draft Network. You're rested, you're tanned, you're ready to go, and I knew I needed to match the energy.
I am rested and tanned. That is very, very true, coming off the honeymoon. Mark, thanks again, and we'll talk more, of course, as the season goes on with those two games that come up every year that the Bills have to face the Patriots. So we'll talk again soon. Thanks again.
Sounds great, buddy. Always great to be with you.